horror in the House of Sounds, here to save the day. Let's talk about your favorite movies, have some laughs and fun. Then when you're scared of deep, dark shadows, you won't need to run.
It's all horror fiction, still a screen addiction.
Fans, and welcome to episode 5 of Horror in the House of Salmons season 3. My name is Jamie, and with me as always is Brian.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing a-okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yay.
I'm excited about this episode. It's St. Patrick's Day. We got a couple of great Irish films that we want to share with you guys, and then follow that up with some things to avoid in the bumps in the night if you don't want to get bad luck. But before we get to all of that...
Mostly don't number stuff in Japanese.
Yeah, ugh. You'll find out why. Before we get to all of that, though, I would like to start off by welcoming a new family member to our Patreon.
Oh, awesome. Who's that?
Our brand new patron is Marie Mueller, and I have known her since Devour.
Wow. Yeah, she actually contacted me out of the blue on Twitter looking for you.
Yeah, I left Twitter.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's what I had to tell her.
Yeah, and then she sent us a message and she's like, I finally joined the Patreon. And I'm like, oh, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well, we both really appreciate the support.
Thank you.
And hope that you enjoy the extra content over there. And thank you for being so supportive for all of these years. I mean, it's been, I don't even know how long, well over 10 years
that easily
I've known her on Twitter. And I believe it was, she first started listening when I was doing Devour. So thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you for being out there. I always loved talking to you on Twitter. Sorry, I haven't been there because Twitter is a cesspool and
yes,
I hate
it. I do like Twitter, but I'm always very careful with what I do on it and where I go. And I just don't read certain things because it's going to piss me off. So I manage my social media very carefully.
Yeah, which means you pretty much ignore everything going around you. You just do your thing.
At least 90% of the time, yeah.
Yeah. We did have a message from Abraham. Well, truth be told, I reached out to him first just to see how he was doing. And he said, I'm listening to the latest Friday retro. You guys are killing me as always, especially when Brian called you a wrestling noob.
I forgot about that.
You're full of shit.
Well, you're a noob.
I'm not.
Thanks for listening, man. Glad you liked the show, or at least that part of it.
Yeah, I have had a very extensive Facebook Messenger conversation with Jerry Mosley about Scream 6.
Oh, okay.
We're both going through, talking about our likes and dislikes, and he pretty much settled on the same score that I did, and I think we kind of brought up the same stuff.
Yeah. In short, it's a good movie. It's not a great movie. It's not the best of the franchise by far, but it's not the worst either. So that's pretty much how I feel about it.
And that's all I have to say about that. Actually, we might be doing a Patreon review. We haven't really decided yet.
Yeah, I don't know if I have enough interesting things to say about it, to be honest.
Well, I don't know how interesting they'd be, but I have a lot to say.
You always do.
I do. Debbie made a post on the Facebook page, and she tagged you specifically and said,
I love when that happened.
I just watched Annihilation for the first time. If you've watched it, did you get the vibe that it was another interpretation of Color Out of Space? I did. That was from her.
Awesome. Good on you for noticing that, because it is. It's very much his... I know the author who wrote the book that the movie is based on. And he is a big Lovecraft fan, and it is no secret. So I don't mind that when people do that, like they build off something that, well, specifically Lovecraft did, and they take it in new directions and all that. As long as they don't try to hide the fact, or, you know, oh, I just came up with this. No, I mean, he's very open with the yes, I love The Color Out of Space. I had my own take on it, and that's what I wanted to do. So yeah, I did know that. but good on you for recognizing it. A lot of people out there who aren't, you know, super duper huge Lovecraft fans may not know that.
I just wish I liked that movie more.
I need to watch it again. I've only seen it the one time, and I liked the majority of it. There were a few things I wasn't feeling at the time, but there was some stuff in it that I mean, Jesus Christ, that bear. The screaming bear.
Yeah.
That was freaking awesome.
I loved that. And I loved the big croc.
Yeah. So I need to sit down and give it a second watch at the very least.
I also got a message from Dave James Parker who says, "So I was listening to your new episode and was happy to hear the Romero love, especially after hearing someone badmouth Dawn of the Dead made me cringe so bad."
How can you badmouth Dawn of the Dead?
I don't get it. But then for both of us, it is our number two movie of all time. So
true. I point to this a lot. There's a lot of best horror movies of all time lists. Dawn of the Dead is always up there. Now, of course, as I always say, you have your own opinion, and it can make as little or as much sense as you want it to. And there's no accounting for people's different opinions. But that is something I just can't wrap my head around. I like that movie so much. Even objectively, I think it's a damn good movie. If I try to divorce myself of all my personal connections and feelings from it, I still go, no, that is a good movie, considering when it was made, how it was made, the climate, and the impact it had. That movie is a giant.
I don't think that any of that you said is wrong. I mean, it is incredibly influential. And apart from that, it's just fun and comforting. It's a comfort movie.
Yeah, it is my ultimate comfort movie.
But the characters are phenomenal.
Before, I could watch it all day, every day, for the rest of my life, and I would probably be happy with that.
Yeah.
I adore that movie, and I don't know why. It's just...
And we'll never turn down an opportunity to watch it.
Nope.
I also wanted to give a big shout-out and lots of love to Frygay the 13th, who just celebrated their 5th anniversary podcast. So you guys, you're doing great. If anybody out there has not heard Frygay the 13th, I highly recommend it. It's a fun show. They're great guys, and it's one that I always listen to.
I still love that name.
It's a great name. And yeah. Then, like I've said before, their tagline, "Get Slayed," which I love it.
Happy anniversary, Frygay guys.
Yep, and they talk about, in case you didn't get it from the name, they talk about horror in movies and horror in real life from an LGBTQ perspective. And they do the coolest thing with their ratings, because they rate out of 7 based on the gay rainbow.
Mm, so they can give a movie an orange rating?
They actually use numbers, but okay. You could correlate that to the colors if you want. But I just think that's cool and inventive.
Very Roy G. Biv of them.
Wow. Maddie, Andrew, keep it up. Because it's you're doing great, and I love listening to you. So, and I've also... Andrew is someone I have considered a friend for a very long time, and I'm very happy to see them doing well. Is there anything else?
Don't think so.
Okay, well then I guess with that, we will head on into our movie discussion right after this tiny little break. You get back here. We have to do the alphabet.
No way. I'm busting loose.
That's the son of the ABCs of Hidden Horror. Okay, we are back, and this is exciting. For the first time this season, you get to talk about your movie first.
Is it the first time?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And whether we go in order of release year or alphabetically, you get to go first.
Ah, that's the way it should be. My movie is Grabbers from 2012. Directed by John Wright, written by Kevin Lehan, and starring a bunch of people I really don't know because they're probably all Irish and I don't see a ton of Irish films.
But Killian Coyle, Ruth Bradley.
I just know her, so that's...
And Russell Tovey, I think. He's the only person I recognized because he, years ago, played in a, I think it was a BBC comedy where it was a vampire, a werewolf, and a ghost all living.
Oh, yeah. It was called... Being Human?
Something like that. Yeah. They're all living together in a flat in the UK somewhere and just comedy adventures follow.
Is that Patty?
I can't even remember.
The old guy.
No, that was the doctor guy.
Oh, okay.
He played the werewolf, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, a bunch of people I don't automatically recognize, but a bunch of good actors really doing good work. Just based on the characters alone, I really like this movie because it's a little town that's just slightly off, as many movies about little towns are. You know, they're filled with colorful characters and... you know, crazy people and stuff like that. But everyone's good-hearted, and they're all good people, if just a little bit off. Into this small Irish town comes a new cop. She is new to the force, and she's been assigned here, and so she gets to meet her new partner, who's a raging alcoholic, and meets all the strange people in town just in time for an alien visitation. Yes, we get to see the old shot of the Earth and then a asteroid or something streaming towards it. It is odd that it's not coming towards America, because in the old sci-fi movies, everything landed in America. You figured it would take up like 80% of the space on Earth, but no, here it's going to Ireland. And out of said rock come some creepy crawlies. At first, we don't get a good look at them, as we shouldn't. But we do get to see some of their goings-ons. There are people getting killed and beheaded and torn apart. It should be pointed out this is a horror comedy, because once I get to the crucial plot point, you'll recognize it. But there's a scene where there's a knock at the door and some people go to the door. And they have a friend who's notoriously drunk all the time.
He says he's pissed as a fart.
Yeah, he's pissed as a fart. It should be said, yes, this is a movie made in Ireland by Irish people, so they really embrace the stereotype of, you know, all Irish people, if not being a drunk, loving a good pint or two. So, they see their friend out there, drunk as a fart, dancing around. And it turns out he's not really dancing or drunk. He is...
quite dead.
Quite dead. And soon, so are they.
And he's being marionetted by...
something.
Something.
Bad stuff starts to happen to some people. There is the new police recruit, her older and drunker partner, and now a doctor enters the picture. And together they start to uncover the pieces of this alien invasion. They find an egg, and they find a little dead version of a something. It kind of looks like a squid, but a bit more on the whole Cthulhu side of tentacle monster thing. And little by little they come to realize that, yeah, there's all these alien things. They need two things. Water and blood. They eat the blood and they live in the water. And when it rains, they can actually come out of the ocean and crawl all over land and this way get more victims and all that stuff.
It just so happens they're having a storm rolling in.
Yes. So there's going to be a ton of rain, which means these creatures are going to be able to go all over the island and get anybody they want.
Like Patty says, when it's raining, there's no such thing as dry land.
Yeah. So they have to figure out how to stop these critters and how to protect themselves from it and how to protect the island, because most people don't realize what's going on. It's only a handful of people who have pieced it together thus far. And here is a twist that truly makes this movie memorable, makes it stand out.
And very Irish.
And very Irish. Because these creatures drink blood to live, well, alcohol is a poison. And if you get drunk enough, suddenly your blood is now poisonous to these creatures. So our little cabal of heroes realize we gotta get drunk and we gotta get everybody on the island totally drunk to protect them from these critters while we do something to get rid of them. So that's the movie. A bunch of people getting pissed drunk and then having to fight aliens while pissed drunk. And that is hilarious, and it is. This is a very cool horror comedy that works both as a horror movie, because there's tentacle alien monsters roaming all over, and at the end we get to see one ginormous, straight out of Lovecraft type of Cthulhu monster running around trying to eat everybody. It's the big daddy of the whole posse of little guys. And the fact that everybody has to face off against this thing while totally hammered is golden. You get to see all these. There's one guy who's not drunk. Ironically enough, it is the drunk cop, the older partner. He decides to stay sober because somebody has to be on the whole island. But that puts him at danger because now all the aliens will want him as opposed to everyone else because they can smell the alcohol in your body. And by and large, they don't mess with you. So that's a movie. Drunk Irish people versus tentacle monsters. And it is really surprisingly good. The special effects are surprisingly well done for such a low... Well, I don't even know what the budget of this movie is. I'm just assuming it's low budget because most movies made outside of Hollywood are, when in comparison, to Hollywood movies. But the CGI looks good because they use it for the aliens. And as I've often said, CGI is good when it's used to bring the truly alien, the truly weird, to life. When they try to bring people or even animals that we have seen every single day and know about, you can always see that uncanny valley. But when it's a big, weird tentacle monster, well, you don't see that every day, so your mind just goes along with it and goes, yep, that's what they must look like.
Even then, though, it's not a guarantee it's going to look good, because as we have proven by just watching the most recent Children of the Corn...
True, but...
You still have to, even if it's a fantastical creature, I think yeah. It's easier, but you still have to do it right. And yes. I think these guys did it right. Like, well, it looks amazing.
It does. And I don't know how they do it, but I know when it comes to CGI, it's all about man hours. It's all about having the time and the people enough to process it and reprocess it. Sit and lay in the shadows and the lighting, because all that stuff in reality we take it for granted because it is reality. We see it, we recognize it, we move on. But in CGI, when something, even if it's just a little thing, is off, your brain recognizes it. That is the uncanny valley, where everything looks pretty damn good, but there's just something about it you can't put your finger on that makes it look phony. I didn't get that at all with these, you know, squiddy monster things. And it's actually pretty cool because the little ones look actually pretty cute when they're just rolling around and they're squeaking and they're having a good time. It's only when the big daddy comes out that it turns into, oh wow, that is scary. It is something that could mess you up really bad. Anyways, that's me. I've been babbling about this movie like a drunk Irishman. Hee. If we have any Irish visitors, I'm just joking.
Well, or Paul, listeners. If for sure.
Oh, yeah. Damn, I forgot about that. Hey, what's up? Put the beer down and listen for a minute.
I love this movie. I've seen it, I don't know, 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
It is just hilarious. It actually sticks out to me. The first time I saw it, I was trapped at the lab. It's a long story, but I ended up having to spend the night at the lab one night. And I was watching it on my computer on Netflix.
Oh.
And that was the first time I saw it. And I just fell in love with it. It's hilarious. The effects are fantastic. It does have, you know, some serious things that happen. I mean, people are getting decapitated and eaten. And so it's just, it's one of those perfect blend movies.
Yes.
I think it's hilarious that the idea came from Kevin Lehane, who is the writer, spent some time backpacking across the world. And he had heard an urban legend that eating Marmite would prevent mosquito bites because it was so yeasty. So it made him wonder, well, then do mosquitoes also get drunk from, or hungover from eating drunk people's blood? So then that kind of stuck in his head. And then he came up with this whole idea of being drunk to survive. And what better place to set it than Ireland? Maybe maybe Scotland. Like, you know, they'd be kind of neck and neck. It's so great. But my favorite part is, honestly, Ruth Bradley, I think, steals the whole movie. She is so funny.
She is really good.
And
when she starts acting drunk.
Her drunk is, I swear I would believe it if you told me. And I looked it up because I wanted to know, did she really get drunk to play this role? Because she is so believable. And it's so funny. Like, there's a part where they're trying to get the town to go to this lock-in at a pub so that everyone can get drunk and stay safe. But they don't want to tell the town why they're doing this because it'll cause a panic. So so she goes up to the front and, you know, they're as the police and they're telling people, oh, we're having this party. And then the woman who owns the pub, she's like, wait, you're throwing a party? Why? And she's like, oh, it's a welcome party for me. And this being the Ruth Bradley's Garda character, and she just got into town.
Police
woman. And the woman's like, a welcome party? You're only going to be here for a fortnight. And she's like, well, then it's a goodbye party, whatever. And she's like, but you only just got here. And then she turns to the other guy and she's like, what's her problem? And I swear to God, it is just the cutest thing. She's adorable. She's so funny. It's one of those movies where they have this fantastic ensemble cast. Everybody, you get the impression that they all know each other. Like, it just feels like...
It feels like genuine. A legit small town.
Yeah, yeah. It feels totally genuine. And another thing I love about this is all the nods to other movies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, there is a billboard when you first come into town for... It's called Erin Island. And when you first come into town, there's a billboard for it that is a straight up knockoff of the Jaws billboard for Amity Island.
Mm-hmm.
There is a direct quote from Predator toward the end where he's like, come on, come and get me. What are you waiting for? Or I think,
come on, do it. Because everybody loves my Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I've heard that repeatedly now.
Alex was telling us that he and Tiffany replay Brian's impression over and over and over again, but
because it's so good, it's so spot on.
But this is
how did they get Arnold Schwarzenegger on our little podcast?
I know, it's incredible. This is one of those really fun movies that I think it's fun to just watch and pick things out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's clear that they're horror fans, and the idea that they're kind of taking the piss out of it, but in a very respectful way. It is a comedy, but they're not trashing the genre.
Yeah, they're not making fun at. They're making fun with. And that's the difference, where if you make a horror comedy or just have comedy in your horror film, as long as you're making the same kind of jokes that genre fans would make, you're setting it up lovingly. Then I'm totally fine with that, because... Well, I do that too, as do we all, because we're fans. It's when you're making fun at it, like, oh, this is so stupid, oh, you know, that's when I'm like, you know what, fuck you. Go do something else if you think this is so beneath you. So yeah, you get a really good sense that, no, they love horror films and sci-fi invasion films specifically, because they borrow a lot of tropes from that, and then they just mix in all the stuff you'd get from a small Irish town, plus all the stuff you would get when everybody is really, really, really drunk at the end and having to try to fight off this tentacle monster, which isn't drunk at all. So, it's a really good idea, and it's a really good movie that I never hear anyone talk about. You never hear this just brought up out of the blue and just, oh yeah, you ever see Grabbers? It's often been forgotten about, and that's just a shame, because it is a damn good movie.
Oh, yeah. This is one that, I mean, like I said, the first time I saw it, I fell in love with it. I've seen it numerous times since. It is entertaining and just a joy. Just pure joy.
Yeah. If you haven't seen Grabbers, sadly, I don't think it's showing anywhere, like streaming, is it?
It is not.
So we had to watch it on disc. It is on DVD. I don't know if they released a Blu-ray version, at least not in North America, I don't think. But maybe in the UK, where it's from, you might be able to find it in a better format. But however you see it, I do highly recommend it. It is just a really enjoyable, good time. You have anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much it. The performances, the special effects, the nods to other things.
Yeah.
It's a simple premise, but a very effective one.
Yep. And just, it's done very well. With the cast, with the direction, maybe it could have been done better. I just don't see how. I think it was made to the best of the ability, and it really shows. This is a perfect example of a very damn good movie that probably wasn't made for a whole lot of money. But if you have enough skill and enough love for what you're doing, it shows.
Okay, well, that being said, I guess we can then move on to my choice.
Okay. What's yours?
Mine is The Hallow from 2015. It was written and directed, well, the story was by Corin Hardy, and it was directed by Corin Hardy. But the screenplay was written by Felipe Marino, and actually he also gets a story by credit along with Tom DeVille. In this, there is a family consisting of Adam, played by Joseph Mall, Claire, played by Boyana Novaco, and then they have their little baby, Finn, who is the most adorable baby. Baby's so cute. This also has Michael Smiley as Agarda, who comes by. He only has a very small role, but he's the one actor that everyone knows in this movie, I think. And in this, Adam is a tree guy, and there's a lot of industry going on. This is a bit of an eco-horror film, because it talks about how, you know, we men are encroaching, and men as in humankind, are encroaching on the natural world and pushing everything back and displacing creatures from their homes. And in this film, they're specifically referring to what they call the Hallow. It's the fae, the mythical creatures, elves, fairies, that sort of thing. And when you do that, then nature fights back. So they end up having, they get a little home. I don't know if they're renting the home or buying it. I guess they're probably renting it because I think they're only going to be there for a short period of time while he's working with this lumber company.
Yeah, I can't imagine they would buy a house just to go out there and do that one job.
Yeah, but they're out in the middle of the countryside, and their home is this cottage that is 500 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it.
Something like that.
And they're living out in this little glen. When we first meet them, Adam and the baby Finn are walking, and the dog Iggy are taking a walk through the forest, and he's marking trees. And Claire is back at the house, removing iron bars from the window.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, they live out in the middle of nowhere, like I said, in this tiny little glen. They have to travel a good distance just to get to the town. So, you think they had a big burglary problem out there?
I would say no.
That's what I would say, too. And I think I might think about it before I go removing these iron bars from my windows. I don't know. I just feel like I might think there was a reason for it. But that also makes me wonder if they did buy the house, because would you rent a home and
take off the bars?
Take stuff off the windows? So I don't know. We also find out that they have a neighbor, Cullum, who is very unhappy about them being there. And he keeps coming by. He wants to talk to Adam. It's clear there's something he desperately wants to talk to him about, but they keep never meeting up at the same time. And Adam and Claire think that Cullum is bad, or that he has like nefarious reasons for not wanting them there. But
because he comes off all intense and kind of like a dick. He's always, "Where's your husband? I need to talk to him." And just, he's very
aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we do find out that he had a little girl that had been wandering in the forest and disappeared. And he has his own ideas about where he thinks she is and what happened to her. And in his eyes, he's trying to warn the family. Yeah. Well, but he just doesn't do it very well. Because what he tells Claire is that it's dangerous for Adam out here and the little one. And that the way he says it, it kind of comes off as a threat. Although, I mean, I can see why she would think that. But us watching it, I didn't get that impression. But I knew that that's what she was thinking. But things start happening, weird things that they think is Cullum. Like, they're one night, they're downstairs making dinner. Finn is upstairs in his crib, and through the baby monitor, they hear crashing glass and the baby's crying. So they go run upstairs, and something has broken the window. Well, they think it was Cullum, so they call the police out. That's when Michael Smiley comes by, and he tells them that he thinks it was a bird who flew into the window. But they don't believe that. And Adam starts finding weird things. There's actually what I think is very cool is that cordyceps plays a big role in this.
What else does cordyceps play a big role in?
The Last of Us. Yes. So if anybody is watching The Last of Us right now, I think a lot of this would be kind of similar, because they take the same idea. It's exactly the same idea, in that it's the cordyceps that control the ants.
Mm-hmm.
They actually use that same example in this film.
Yeah. It's a different take on the whole fairy subgenre, because the fairies play a big part in Irish folklore and mythology and all that. I think a lot of people outside of Ireland and maybe even, I don't know, were fairies big in Scotland?
Yeah.
Okay. But I just know they're always big in Ireland, and anybody outside that, we think of fairies like Tinkerbell, some little cute girl, tiny wings buzzing around, throwing fairy dust around, but it really wasn't. They were dark and twisted and messed up. And they weren't necessarily evil, although some were. They were mostly amoral, and they liked to fuck with people.
And mischievous.
Yeah, a lot. So there is a wealth of
but
folklore.
Dark mischief.
Yes.
Not like they would put a whoopee cushion down or something like that. No, they'll fuck you up.
I really like how they took that and put a modern scientific answer to it. And I really like the look of these things. They don't look like fairies, cute little things with butterfly wings or anything like that. They are nasty and really messed up looking. Because they're people who have been taken over by this fungus, this plant thing. And so they're half wooden looking, or covered in bark, or strange fungal growths. They're very much, they've been usurped by nature. And they live in underground, and just all the dark fairy tropes are there and done very well in this movie, I think.
Oh, I completely agree. I also like the fact that they introduced this cordyceps concept in there, and they also bring in classic stuff like the changeling.
Yes.
Like the idea of a changeling. So they do a nice little blend of stuff you know from folklore and stuff they've incorporated in.
iron, cold wrought iron hurts fairy folk in most legends and myths. And it kept that here. So it's definitely a mix of the old and the new. It's a very small story. It's mostly about a man, a woman, and their kid living out in the woods. And it's just done very well, I think. This is not a horror comedy at all. It's just
straight. And I also think the effects in this movie look pretty good. There are a couple of cases of dodgy CGI here and there, but for the most part,
yeah.
No, I think everything looks good. And you like this family. Or at least I do. I like this family. I want them to be okay. So I'm on board with them while they're going through everything they're going through. This also has one of my favorite lines, and it's one of those lines that you love from a movie, but if you quote it, no one would ever get it because no one's seen this movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, people have seen it, but no one talks about it. But it's one of my favorite lines is when Michael Smiley comes.
We're back to doing hidden horror.
Hidden horror, I know. When Michael Smiley comes and he tells Adam, who is from London, by the way, the family is English, and he tells them, you know, this isn't London, Adam. Here, things go bump in the night. And I love that line. You know, because they're out in the middle of the woods. And he says he doesn't, the cop says, no, he doesn't really believe in this stuff. But most of this town does, because Adam actually takes the window into town to get it repaired. And the guy says, I'll fix it. But if your wife doesn't put the iron bars back up, there's really no point.
Yeah.
So people in this town really believe. And I think the only reason the Michael Smiley character doesn't is he actually says, no, I don't believe in this stuff, but I'm from Belfast. There's a whole different kind of monster up there.
Yeah.
Which, that was pretty good too. That's a pretty good line. So people who are from this town, and they have been rooted in this town for hundreds of years, they believe this. Now, of course, this family coming from England, and they're young, and, you know, he's
a scientist.
So they're not going to easily believe this stuff.
But to their credit, they soon start believing relatively quick.
Yeah, I mean, well, I do like that. Because these aren't characters where you have to go, here's an example, and then they go, nah, that's not happening. And then you go, here's an example, and they go, nah, that's not happening.
Yeah.
No, when shit starts to go down, and it looks, and they see what's actually happening, they fall right in and start fighting for their lives.
Yeah, that's always been a bugaboo of mine. The people who just, nope, 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 no matter what happens, what they see, what they experience, nope, 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 nope. And it's just like, that's not realistic. At least not to me, anyways. I don't believe in anything supernatural, aliens, anything like that. But if I saw it in front of me, I'd probably go, okay, yeah, you know, that is something. They do a good job here of having some disbelief, because it is an amazing story, but once you start seeing it in your face, you can't just, nope, 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 nope. They realize what's going on, and they act appropriately, and I like that. That's smart.
Yeah, I mean, admittedly, it does take them a little bit, because in the beginning, they're kind of hung up on this whole thing being Colm, but it's because, why would you believe that right away? You know, you're not gonna just go, oh, fairies? Oh, makes sense. Like, no, it's natural. It's natural for them to look for a more realistic reason. But it doesn't take them a lot. Yeah. They're not fighting against it for the whole movie.
It's a balancing act. You gotta have something. I mean, because otherwise, then it's the exact opposite. They're like almost in on it. They're like, of course this is it. And it's like, why would you jump to that? So no, you have to come off a little bit disbelieving at first. But then once there's undeniable, indisputable proof, that's when you stop, no, 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 it just can't be that. And you have to go, okay, yeah, this is happening. And now you have to deal with it. And this movie does that, and it does it very well. It also has a really great ending. It plays with folklore, and I'm a big sucker for that. So yeah, this is just a very good horror movie that, again,
I don't hear a lot of people talking about.
No, I never hear anyone talking about it. And that's a shame because it is not only a great Irish horror film, which, I mean, like I said, going in, I have a soft spot for Irish films. And that's because they often play on Irish folklore, which I adore. But what I like about this, like we've said, is that they do blend it a little bit old and they put in some new ideas, which I think work very well. And it does make me sad that no one really talks about this movie. I think it deserves it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Fortunately, if you want to watch this one, it's much easier to watch than Grabbers. And that is because this one is available on Tubi. And we love Tubi.
Yes, we do.
Tubi is free.
Yes.
So get you some Tubi and watch The Hallow from 2015. I don't think you'll regret it.
It's a damn good movie. I thought both of these movies were really good. And both of them I haven't seen in quite a, you know, at least a little bit. So they were both good returns to give a second watch or a third watch or a fourth watch or whatever.
Well, those are our two picks for Irish films to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Yay!
You know, if you don't want to watch Leprechaun.
Yes.
Which I don't.
Nice alternatives.
All right, and with that, we will duck out of here and come back with a little Bumps in the Night.
Excellent.
Bumps in a Night.
For Bumps in the Night, I thought it would be fun to go through a list of bad luck omens.
Oh.
You know, because it's all about the luck of the Irish.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Now, these aren't all Irish, but we did actually talk about a lot of Irish folklore when we did the Rawhead Rex review last season.
Ah, that makes sense.
So I wanted to find something a little different. Now, of course, there are going to be things here that you all know about, but I guarantee you there are things on this list, and I haven't even looked at the whole list, but I have seen a couple of things that I guarantee you've never heard of. So let's get started.
Okay.
First on the list is breaking a mirror is said to bring 7 years of bad luck. Well, we all know about that
one. Yeah. Do they say what that came from, or no. Is it just listed?
It just says.
I can only assume that was from ye olden times when glass was very rare and expensive.
Yeah, I actually believe that is where that came from.
So it's just like, you know.
It's just a practical thing.
Yeah, you broke a mirror that cost a lot of money, that's bad.
Next up, a bird or flock of birds going from left to right.
That's bad.
Yeah, apparently that is a pagan belief, but I don't know specifically which pagan group. It doesn't say. But going from left to right.
Hmm. Okay.
So I guess maybe if you don't see them, it's not bad luck. So if you see like what you think is a flock of birds coming at you from the left, avert your eyes.
That is so arbitrary because it all depends on where you...
Oh, for
sure. Where you're standing when you see the birds.
Absolutely.
Because for you, it could be bad if you see them going left to right. Somebody right across from you would see them going right to left, so I guess that's a good thing.
Or just nothing at all. I don't know. Of course, there are certain numbers that have bad luck attached to them. One of those is the number 4, and that is referred to as tetraphobia. In Chinese, Japanese, and Korean languages, the number sounds like the word for death.
Hmm.
And that has actually been played up in movies, the number 4 in Asian cultures. And I want to say, did it come up in A Record of Sweet Murder?
You know, it very well could have. I know that I've seen it in J-horror, or I guess it's Asian horror. And I remember the first time, I was like, what? I never heard of that. And now, obviously, I have.
The number 9... the fear of number 9 is known as eniaphobia, and in Japanese culture, this is because it sounds like the Japanese word for suffering.
Man, Japan needs to get some new numbers.
Yeah, well, I got another one. The number 42 might be the answer for everything.
Ha ha!
But in Japanese culture, the number 43 is bad luck. So much so that maternity wards numbered 43 are considered taboo, as the word for the number means stillbirth.
Jesus.
Well, if that's the case, why would you even number a maternity ward 43?
Yeah. Why would you even call a number that? It's like in English, go, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, stillbirth.
Yeah. Oh, and then suffering.
Yeah, suffering, death, and goddamn.
I mean,
are they just some grim motherfuckers over there?
They kind of did it to themselves. Of course, the number 13, which is known as triskaidekaphobia. However, I happen to love the number 13.
Why is that?
It's just a nice number. I don't know. That's it.
Okay.
Well, because it ties me directly to you.
Yes,
on many levels.
Yes, it does. It's been our good luck number.
The number 17. Fear of that number is known as heptadecaphobia and is prominent in Italian culture.
I've never heard of that one. I don't like how they don't tell you why. Italians don't like the number 17. Why?
I don't know.
The number 39 is known as the curse of 39 in Afghan culture.
The curse of 39. What is that? Nobody knows.
Well, the curse of 39, also referred to as triacontinophobia, is the fear of the number 39.
Well, shit.
Thanks.
Thank
in
you.
In some parts of Afghanistan, the number is considered to be cursed or a badge of shame, as it is purportedly linked with curse, shame, and prostitution. What? That doesn't tell me anything. It's considered bad luck because it's bad luck.
Yeah.
The origin of the superstition is unclear, but it has widely been claimed to have been associated with a pimp allegedly living in the western city of Herat, who was nicknamed 39 after the registration plate of his expensive car and the number of his apartment. The number is said to translate into Mordagau, literally meaning dead cow, which is a well-known slang term for a pimp.
Others, a dead cow?
Yeah. Others have blamed corrupt police officials for spreading the number in order to charge between $200 to $500 to change a 39 plate. Whoa, so if you get assigned a 39 license plate and you want to change it, you got to pay $200 to $500?
That's fucking nuts.
That's ridiculous.
Also, if his ladies get out of line, does he give them a dead cow hand?
Aha!
Does he walk with a dead cow stick?
Can you see Wings Hauser swinging around dead cows? Next up, the number 666. Well,
of course.
We know why. That is the number of the beast. But it's referred to as Hexacosio Hexacontelehidophobia.
Are you speaking in tongues?
Hexacosio Hexacontelehidophobia. Hexaphobia.
Yeah, I'm never gonna call it that.
Friday the 13th in Spain, Greece, and Georgia.
State or the country?
It's Tuesday the 13th. Huh. So Friday the 13th in general is considered bad luck, but in Spain, Greece, and Georgia, it is Tuesday the 13th. Georgia the country, not Georgia my state, so don't
start you're from Georgia. What happened on Tuesday down there?
Another omen is failing to respond to a chain letter.
Oh, yeah. Hell, there was even a stupid movie called Chain Letter.
Yeah. Giving a clock as a gift in Chinese culture, as in Chinese, to give a clock has the same pronunciation as sending off for one's end. Jesus. I gave you a clock for our first anniversary. I gave you the Munster's clock.
Yeah.
I was not sending you off to your inn. Not on purpose, anyway. Hanging a horseshoe with the ends pointed down, as it is believed that the luck will fall out. I've always heard that if your horseshoe flips, then the luck runs out. Opening an umbrella while indoors. Of course, we're aware of that. And I honestly don't know where that comes from either, except maybe if you were in a tight space and you open an umbrella, you could poke somebody in the eye.
Yeah.
On the Isle of Man, rats are referred to as long tails, as saying rats is considered bad luck.
Okay.
I don't know why. Doesn't say. I have several here from Navajo culture. These are all from Navajo culture. Pointing at a rainbow. Throwing rocks into the wind. Well, that's just going to come back and hit you.
That's just common sense. It's like pissing in the wind. You just don't do it.
A coyote crossing one's path heading north. Now, does that mean the coyote is heading north
or you're heading north?
An owl flying over a house. Yeah, I don't know why.
That is very specific.
It is, and also, I'm sure that happens from time to time. So what are you going to do about it? Placing chopsticks straight up in a bowl of rice in Chinese and Japanese culture is reminiscent of food offerings left for the dead.
I've heard of that before. Yeah.
In England, it is bad luck to point towards feces.
Really?
Yeah. I would love it. And all of our English people out there, do you guys, is that a thing that you know about?
Or if you see a dog turd and you go, look at that. You can't point at it. You gotta like nod towards it with your head or something.
Of course, ravens, crows, and magpies, which is a shame because they're all beautiful birds. Yeah. I love them.
And smart as hell, yeah.
Saying the word Macbeth or wishing someone good luck while inside a theater.
Yes, I've heard of that.
I knew about the good luck, but I didn't know you were supposed to not say Macbeth.
For some reason, it's
I mean, who
cursed.
Just runs up to people and says, Macbeth? shoes on a table. I knew about that.
That's just good hygiene.
Yeah. Three on a match.
Yeah.
Which means, for people who aren't familiar, it's if three people use the same match. Like, you light a match, you light your cigarette, you pass it to them. When I was young, we would avoid three on a match, but we'd also avoid yellow lighters. I always heard yellow lighters were bad luck, and I don't know why.
And green M&Ms make you horny.
Yeah. Tipping a salt shaker over. Of course, everybody knows if you spill some salt, you got to toss it over your left shoulder. Viewing one's doppelganger may be considered a harbinger of bad luck.
Well, no shit. I mean, you shouldn't have a doppelganger anyways.
Killing a ladybug. And I think that's just because ladybugs are considered good luck.
Yeah.
So if you kill one, it's bad luck. Walking under a ladder. Black cats crossing one's path, which we'd be in trouble if that were true because we got nothing but black cats running around here.
And one gray one.
She is a silver tabby.
She's gray.
She's silver. That's pretty much all I got there.
No. There were some good ones. There were some I've never heard of before.
Yeah, I mean, most of them were pretty well-known and obvious, but I particularly thought it was funny, the whole pointing at feces thing. Also, how many times do people point at feces?
Maybe that's a big British, tradition. They just love pointing at shit. Look at that! That's shit! Look right there!
Oh, no! And then they get killed by a pane of glass or something.
A lightning bolt out of the blue.
And so there you go, people. Don't do any of that or say any of those things, and you should be fine. Although it sounds to me like if you live in Japan, you might be fucked, because every single number is apparently named after something horrible.
Horrible, yeah. I mean, what the hell were they on when they were coming up with their numbers?
43, stillbirth. Why would you name anything after stillbirth?
Yeah.
God. You can make up other words. It's okay. No disrespect, of course, to any of our cultures. I find them all rich and interesting, and this was very entertaining for me.
Yeah.
But if you guys know of any that are just wild or ridiculous or something crazy...
That we didn't cover here.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I love knowing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be right back with the collection. Attack of the Colossal Collection. 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 Now is time on Sprockets When We Dance.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Or it's time for Attack of the Colossal Collection.
Yay!
If you want to be boring about it.
Yeah.
So what do we start with?
Well, first, it's a movie that was just a little bit out of order. I mean, that sometimes happens on a shelf. I don't know how, but...
because we just rearranged them.
I know, but it's a superhero movie. And I don't have a ton of those. I have a few of the early ones, like this one. Like Spider-Man 1 and 2. I never got 3.
I brought Iron Man and the Hulk, I think.
Yeah, I don't even think I had those. So, yeah.
And do we have Superman 1978?
Yes, and we have, like, Avengers, the first one, not the Endgame or whatever it was.
Or so, 79.
With the exception of Batman, because we do have a lot of Batman movies, but he's Batman.
We have all the Batman.
Not all of them. We don't have the Joel Schumacher Batmans, because they kind of suck. But this one, since we're in the D's, is Daredevil from 2003. And I've always liked this one. I don't think it's great, but I never had a deep love for the character like previously. I've come to like the movie Constantine more over the years that I've seen it. But when it first came out, I really didn't like it because it was so different from the Hellblazer comics, which I do know and I do love. And so all I could see was the differences and all that. It took me quite a few rewatches to get over that and just go with the movie, and now I like the movie a lot. So I can see where, I guess if you're a big Daredevil fan, you might have some beef with this movie.
I never knew dick about Daredevil. It was not a comic that I read or that I was even, familiar with beyond the fact that he was blind.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have anything for that. But I always liked this movie. I have always thought that Colin Farrell is a hoot as Bullseye.
Yeah. I love how he embraces it. I mean, he totally goes for the comic book craziness. And, you know, I think Ben Affleck, he gets a lot of shit. I don't know why. People just seem to hate him. Kind of like Tom Cruise. And
I think they're jealous.
Could be. I mean, I don't have a problem with either one of them. Sometimes,
no, I like them both.
Sometimes they're in good movies and they do good work. Sometimes they're in bad movies and do bad work. But I don't automatically like or dislike either one of them. I think here, he plays pretty good Daredevil from what I know of him. What's her name? Jennifer Garner. Yeah, they were a thing at the time. But I think she does okay work as Elektra. I did see the movie Elektra, which came out after this. And that movie's a big piece of shit. We don't own that.
I never saw that one. I don't really care for Jennifer Garner that much. Although,
yeah, no, you don't. You have a thing with her.
Yeah, but after watching Daredevil this time, I liked her better.
Yeah, I think she was okay. I like... oh, who's that? He was John Coffey in The Green Mile.
Doesn't he have like three
Duncan
names?
Something? Michael Clark Duncan.
Yeah.
He plays the Kingpin. I think he was really good. I think the special effects... and this is the God's honest truth. They look better here in a movie that's 20 years old than a lot of the brand new Marvel movies. Because they're going through a shit show when it comes to CGI. They're not giving their CGI departments enough time to make it look good. They're not paying them enough. I don't know, but their CGI in the most recent Marvel movies, I think, sucks. Here... it looks a little fake, but I think it's just leaps and bounds better. As for a movie, it's based off, like, the one comic book series from Daredevil I did read. It's all about him losing his faith and the death of Elektra and all that. It was done by, what's his name? Frank something.
Miller?
Miller, that's it. Who gave us The Dark Knight Returns and a ton of other comic books. That's like the one...
didn't he do Sin City?
Yeah, he did Sin City. He's done a lot of work. But yeah, that was like the one storyline I read, and I enjoyed it.
Did he do The Spirit?
Yes, okay. That sucked. So yeah, I like this movie. I'm not crazy about it, but I don't hate it. What about you?
I like it. I've always liked it. I saw it at the theater. I thought it was fun. This was well before we got drowned in superhero films, so it was a novelty, and I enjoyed it. And I hadn't seen it since. I haven't watched it in 20 years, but when we watched it for this, I thought it held up really well.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people talk shit about it. I don't get it. I mean, unless they're, like you said, really big Daredevil fans. But I don't think everybody who talks shit about this movie is a huge Daredevil fan. But I just don't see it. I don't see why.
I don't know. I think it has something to do with Ben Affleck. I really do. I don't know why people hate him. Maybe because he is a handsome guy. Maybe because he is rich or I don't know what. But a lot of people seem to really like the crap on him. And he's done some shitty things. I'm talking about acting roles. I don't know anything about him as a person. But he's also done some damn good work too. From not only silly stuff like this or the Kevin Smith movies and all that, but serious movies like Argo.
Or Gone Girl.
Yeah, Gone Girl. I just don't get the natural hate
people
for
him. Shit all over Argo, too. That movie got a lot of crap.
Really?
And that was his directorial debut.
I think it won an Academy Award or something like that. I like that movie. Anyways, as for this one, we both like it to the tune of a 3.5 out of 5.
Yay!
We now go to a movie that we like a lot more. Well, because it has zombies in it, how could we not? And it is simply called The Dead, from 2010. Now, this one was made by the Ford brothers. I am not too familiar with them outside of these movies. And it's essentially the zombie apocalypse as it's happening in the middle of Africa. This American white guy is in Africa doing soldier stuff there. He's an engineer. And then the zombie apocalypse hits. He's trying to get out because he needs to get back home to the U.S. to find his wife and kid and, you know, take care of them. Meanwhile, he's in the middle of nowhere. So he teams up with a local soldier and they become buddies and they become friends and they travel across the continent looking for an airstrip or some way he can get out and get back home. This movie looks amazing. It's probably one of, if not the best-looking zombie movies ever from a pure cinematography.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, it's Africa. You have to go out of your way to make it look bad. It just looks amazing. But it also has my favorite kind of zombies, the slow-moving, creepy zombies. And I think they're used here wonderfully. Because here these guys are in the middle of Africa, like the Serengeti or whatever the hell. They never say what country they're in. It's just Africa. So that's how I'm going to refer to it.
They did mention at one point Sierra Leone. I don't know if...
Was that where they're at
that
or
might
just
be
in passing?
Where they were. I think that's where the plane took off from that they were in at the beginning of the movie.
That crashed? Yeah, okay, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I might be remembering that wrong. But they did mention it somewhere.
But these zombies... It's great, because, again, middle of nowhere, just a bunch of Serengeti, you know, brush and desert and all that. But every time they stop to do something, they gotta fix their car, use the bathroom, or search a house for supplies. Here come the zombies. They just show up. And, you know, it's usually just one. And they're like, okay, well, that's nothing. We can keep going, keep looking, we're okay. And then it's another. And you're like, oh, okay, there's two of them, but we're still okay. And then before you know it, they're surrounded. And that's what I like about these slow-moving, creepy zombies, is it's easy to underestimate them. It's easy to think, well, all you gotta do is walk by them quickly, and you'll be fine, until you're not.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you noticed as well that they're silent.
Yes.
Like the Fulci zombies.
Yes.
Which makes total sense. Like, they don't do facial expressions.
Nope.
Like, they are...
Dead.
Motorized dead
yeah.
flesh. And
I like
it's
that.
Brilliant. And the best thing about this film, I think, is that for the African zombies, they actually used
local
people who'd never even seen a movie before. They had no idea what was going on. So I kind of wonder what it was like to put those contacts in their eyes.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, like, this is one of my favorite, all-time favorite zombie movies. I can watch it anytime. It's creepy. It just has this dread that, and you know, my favorite scene is when he climbs up in a tree to sleep.
Oh, and
one night, and
he wakes
then,
up and there's zombies below
and there's
him.
Just that one zombie that just walks silently under the tree, and it's only one, and it doesn't even see him, and nothing happens, but it's fucking scary.
Yeah. Well, again, that's why I prefer slow zombies over fast zombies. Fast zombies can be fun. They come running at you, and, you know, lots of action and shaky cam and all that stuff. But it's the slow, creepy dread of the slow-moving, quiet, unassuming zombies that gets me. Because it's like stains the sands red. Oh, it's just a single zombie. What's so scary about that? Until you realize a zombie will never stop. It doesn't ever get tired. It doesn't ever want to do anything else but eat you. It is single-minded. It is persistent. And all you gotta do is fuck up once. And you're toast. Mm-hmm. So you are never safe. And
with this film in particular, the backstory of how the film was made is even more interesting than the film itself. And the Ford brothers actually published a book about the making of this film. And you can actually hear us talk about that in more detail on the D episode last season, because we covered it in depth.
Yeah.
And there we go into all of the behind-the-scenes stuff and what happened to them while they were filming the movie. So I highly recommend checking that out if you want more detail. And this is definitely a film. You've heard what Stephen Scott had to say about it. So this is definitely a film that deserves checking out.
Oh, yeah, he just watched this recently, right? Because of us. That's awesome. As for this movie, no surprise, we both give it a 5 out of 5. And then we go to 2013 and its sequel, well, aptly named The Dead 2. And this is largely more of the same. You get an American, a white guy, in the middle of a place where he's a fish out of water. In this case, the action all moves to India, which the movie does look just as good as the other one. You can make India look really beautiful if you catch it at the exact right moment with the light and all that stuff, and they do. And again, he has to try to get home, our white American guy. This time he has a girlfriend in India he's trying
different
to
guy.
Get to. Yeah, different guy. And he gets the help from a local kid who's like 10, 12, something like that, to help him cross India, which is basically, it's a country, but it's also known as a subcontinent because it is freaking huge. Unfortunately, this is made by the Ford brothers again, and they wanted to, I don't know, maybe change up their style or do something different, or just because it was the flavor at the time, but they have to resort, in this movie, to shaky cam.
Ugh.
A lot of shaky cam.
And really close-up shots.
Yes.
And editing choices that are just bizarre. And it's the same. John Ford did the cinematography on that film as well.
I don't know what happened.
I don't understand. Like, I don't know what happened. Because
I loved the first
jarring.
Movie so much, and it was so well done. And then this one, it's almost a remake. You know, except for Africa, you got India. You still got a white guy. You still got him teaming up with a local. And you still have... The zombies are all good, too. Again, they're very quiet, very slow, very creepy. But just
there
the,
are more of them here.
Yeah, well,
because... And that's just because of the population.
India, for fuck's sake. That's like one of the last places you want to be in a zombie apocalypse. It's a good movie, but its main drawback is the camera use, the shaky cam, and for me anyways, the fact that it is so similar to the first one. It really does feel like they made the first movie just again.
Yeah, and I think the idea was
but
supposed
worse.
To be, this is what's going on over here,
yeah.
while this is going on over here.
Yeah, because it's not really a sequel, it's happening concurrently. In fact, they actually mention, blah blah blah, in Africa there's a new strain of rabies, or whatever they say. So this is happening at the same time as the other movie.
They do an interesting thing here, and unfortunately I don't think they do it well enough. But they do attempt to bring in Indian lore.
Yeah.
As far as folklore.
Yeah.
And they kind of tell you a little bit of the story toward the middle of the film, and then they call back to it with the ending. But the unfortunate thing is, I feel like it would have been more impactful if they had gone into it even deeper. Or maybe played with it a little more throughout the movie than just the one time the kid tells him the story and then showing up again at the end. But I do like the fact that they attempted to do that, and that's neat.
Yeah.
But it's just a notch under the original Dead. It's still very good, but I wouldn't, whereas I say The Dead is required viewing for zombie fans or just horror fans in general, I don't necessarily think The Dead 2 is required. But I really like it. And well, so if you do love The Dead, then I'd say it's worth a watch.
Technically, you don't really like it. You only gave it a 3.5.
Well, I almost really like it. I more than like it.
Yeah. And so did I. It is a shame that they tried a different filming. And again, I don't like the story being so similar. But it's a good watch. Just not as good as the original.
But I'll bet they didn't have malaria while they were...
Well, yeah.
And maybe that contributed to how good The Dead was, you know, because they were sick as hell at points making that film. And maybe it added to the atmosphere or the acting.
Yeah, I mean, there was something that was in the first movie that wasn't in the second, so that could be...
But yeah, man, that first one, oh my God, I could talk about that for days. It's so good, and it has so many really genuinely scary moments.
Yeah.
But I can't say that about the next movie.
Oh, geez.
Another zombie movie.
Yeah, this is one of the more famous zombie movies we have. Everybody's seen this one. If not, they should. It was done by Peter Jackson before he ever became famous for Lord of the Rings or anything. Yes, I'm talking about Dead Alive from 1992. And this movie, it is a horror comedy in every sense of the word. I would honestly say it's more of a gore comedy because I don't think it's very frightening or scary or even tries to be.
No, it's just comedic with a lot of gore gags.
They turn up the splatter in this movie.
And that's what this movie's known for.
It is crazy.
The reason I watched it the first time I ever watched it was because it was like, the goriest film ever made was on the box. And I'm like, all right, well, show me. And then John Carpenter went, bing.
Yeah, no.
All right.
Okay. You do not like this movie.
No, I do not.
Why?
I just don't because think it's funny.
I do like it. I think most people out there listening...
Most of them do. I am in the minority. I know that.
But you do not.
No.
I've tried watching this movie with you, I think, 3 times now. And every time you're like, meh, I don't like that movie.
Because I don't.
I don't get that. It's stupid, but it's fun stupid. And the gore is crazy.
I get bored with it.
But then again, you also don't like Evil Dead 2 for some stupid reason.
Same reason.
And that movie is awesome, too.
I get bored with it. Like, you gotta give me more than just throwing buckets of blood at me and I'm supposed to think it's funny. Like, I just don't think it's funny.
But it is funny, the way the characters are relating to each other and the splat stick or slapstick nature of it and all that stuff. And, I mean, come on, I kick ass for the lore.
Okay, that I like. I mean, it's not that I dislike the entire film or I would have given it a 1. There are parts that I like. I do think the custard scene is very effective because it's gross as hell and it actually just like, bleh. I like the fact that he comes in with a lawnmower. I think, you know, that works. The preacher works. I even don't get pissed off about the stupid baby when a lot of people hate it for the baby. I don't get pissed off about it. I just think it's dumb. I don't know. I just, after a while, I think the joke wears off and I just am not interested anymore.
Well, I mean, you like what you like and you don't what you don't. There's no rhyme or reason when it comes to taste. You give this a 2 out of 5.
Which Scott Crawford called me out on your Facebook page. He's like, oh, 2! And I mean, and it shocked him, which I understand why it shocked him, because this is, you know, all horror fans love this movie.
Yeah.
This is the kind of movie you would expect me to love. So I get that, and it's fair that it would shock you. I don't know. Sometimes you just don't like things, and I just don't like it.
Well, that's perfectly fine. I don't understand it at all, but, you know, hey, whatever. Like I said, you give it a 2 out of 5. I give it a 4 out of 5.
Because you're on crack.
Yeah, because I like good things. As an example of that, we now go to 2017 with a movie called Dead Ant, A-N-T. And a lot of people haven't seen this movie or even heard about it. And that's a shame because it's really a lot of fun.
I think you got it for review is why we watched it originally, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it is fun. It's... This is another one that is a comedy, and it's a bit of a stupid comedy, but I find this humor far more palatable.
Well, so do I. What's the movie about?
A bunch of people are going to... Where the hell are they going? Coachella.
Not
and
really.
It's the knockoff Coachella.
I think it's called Nochella.
Nochella, yeah. So it's going on, I think, at the same time, though.
Who are these people?
Well, there is a band. It's a metal band, like a hair metal band.
Right out of the 80s.
Straight from the 80s. And their manager is played by Tom Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
And Jake Busey is one of the band members.
Mm-hmm. So is, what's his name, Rudy?
Sean...
Astin.
Astin, yep. Yeah. And... Wow, Rudy's where you went for that?
I always see him.
Most
as
people
Rudy.
Refer to him as Samwise Gamgee, but I just think that's funny.
Most people are wrong.
He was like, "What? Who's that kid that was in Vice Versa?"
Was he in Vice Versa?
Yeah, he was.
Okay. I've only seen that movie once.
But yeah, Sean Astin is in it. I mean, so the cast is solid. It's fun.
Oh, yeah.
And so they go out into the desert, but they are also. Meet up with this group of, I think they're all girls.
They meet two young girls and they go partying with them because, you know, they're a horny metal band.
But they go out to this specific place to buy this specific peyote that is supposed to be, like, the best peyote ever. It will blow your mind. And there are rules that go along with this peyote in this particular sacred area where they are.
The rules!
Yeah, you cannot harm any living creature, or you will be cursed until sundown the next day, I want to say.
Or sunrise, I think.
Or something like that. And while Sean Astin decides not to wait for everyone to take the peyote, he goes ahead and takes his, and then he goes wandering out into the desert, he steps on an ant. And the ant actually tells him, "You fucked up." And I think it's hilarious. And then they start getting attacked. But every time they kill one, the ants come back bigger. So you can't really get... It's like a hydra. You know,
yeah.
When you chop off a head, more grow back. So every time they kill an ant, they come back bigger. Until, like, they're the size of Winnebagos.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie is just basically them trying to survive this onslaught of killer ants, but also while being fucked up on peyote and just being goofy bastards. Like, I don't know. I think it's a whole lot of fun. I think it's especially fun if you watch it while you're enhanced.
Oh, yeah.
And I recommend that. And yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen it, which I think a lot of people haven't, it is totally, I think, worth your time. I have a good time with it.
I mean, come on. It's a metal movie, so right there I'm going to be for it. Plus, it's a big bug movie, and I've always liked big bug movies from, like, the 50s and all that. I grew up watching them on the Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon creature feature and all that. Even before I saw Friday 13th Part 4, I never really consider them horror movies, because they're basically not. But I do have a soft spot for them. And this one, I mean, it's... They're ants, so that reminds me of them. And I love them.
Well, plus they have a lot of callbacks to just various other, like, random horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's I think a horror fan would get a kick out of it.
Oh, yeah. And, yes, all the ants are CGI, but once again, they don't look horrible.
No, I actually think they look pretty good.
So, yeah, you get blood, you get giant ants, you get some boobies, you get some heavy metal, you get some drug use. It's all the things I love and more. And it's surprisingly funny and effective. So, we both gave it a 4 out of 5.
Next up, we have Dead Birds from 2004.
Yay.
Which actually has a lot of personal meaning for me. This was the very first year I started writing for HM, so the very first year that I did a top 10 of the year, this movie was on it.
Nice. And good for you. do you remember how impressed I was when I found out you've seen this movie?
Yeah, well, that's another reason that it's personally important for me, is because very early, like when we first met, you mentioned the movie Dead Birds and asked me if I'd ever seen it. And I was like, yes, I've seen it. It was on my top 10 the year it came out. And you're just like, whoa. It also is important to me in regards to Mike Merriman, because before I was on Evil Episodes with Mike, I did a guest spot with him where we talked about this and Birdemic. And he was disappointed to find out that this wasn't actually about killer birds. He had no idea before he watched it.
Well, you know, Birdemic, dead birds. Yeah. Makes sense.
So he paired them together. And then when he watched them, he's like, these don't go together at all. But it was fun. And that was one of the first things, if not the first thing I ever did with Mike. So this movie actually means a lot to me, which makes it very sad that I've heard a lot of people cut this movie down over the years.
Really?
Oh, yeah. The glacial pacing, the bad CGI, which honestly...
I disagree with both of those.
Yeah, and they use a lot of practical in this movie. It's mostly practical.
There is some CGI, and like all CGI, sure, it could have been better, but I don't think it's bad. As far as the pacing, I have no problem with the pacing.
No.
It's set up as a basic haunted house movie, and those do have, you know, they are paced a certain way. Usually, if you're dealing with a haunted house, it's not going to be bang, boom, ah, ghost, ah, unless it's a shitty one like the Amityville remake.
Yes. Well, in this, it takes place during the Civil War, and there are some deserters who... speaking of cast, I think this cast is impressive.
It is.
Because it has, in the lead, is Henry...
Thomas.
Thomas from E.T., which was the first time I'd seen him since E.T., when this movie came out, that I was aware of. It also has Nikki Acox. It has Isaiah Washington. And
Michael Shannon,
the biggest star of all, who has really crested the hill after this film, is Michael Shannon. And he played just a supporting role in this movie.
Oh, yeah, this is before anybody knew who the hell he was. So just,
he's
a good actor. I think he always has been. But back then, it was like, who is that guy? I don't know.
I don't even know if Bug had come out at that point. I don't remember what year that came out. These guys, they... Oh, and it has... I can never remember his name, but he's that fat guy with all the hair.
Boone. Something Boone.
Okay.
He's been in a ton of movies.
A ton. He was the one who gets his belly eaten out by rats in Fast and Furious 2.
That's what you go to for him?
I've seen it a lot. So, anyway, these guys, they rob a bank and then they take the gold. And Henry Thomas, when he was in an army hospital during the war, that's where he met Nikki Acox, who is now his girlfriend. Her name is Annabelle in the movie. And he also met another soldier who was in the hospital. And this soldier told him about this abandoned farm, plantation, called the Hollister Place. So he knew it was there, and that guy died, so nobody owned it. So when they robbed the bank, they decided to go hide out in this abandoned plantation.
How'd that go for them?
It did not go well. When they first get there, they shoot and kill a bizarre-looking creature. It looks kind of like a skinned dog or something.
Yeah.
And they don't know what it is, but they're like, let's get the fuck in the house. So they go into the house, and shit just starts happening. Like, things are fucking with them. They're seeing visions. They're seeing ghosts. People are disappearing. And it just... I understand that it does seem to move slowly, but what I love about it is that it moves slowly. It builds the dread. And there is one scene where... I want to say Isaiah Washington looks out the window, or maybe it was Michael Shannon, looks out the window because Boone, can't remember his name in the movie, but he had disappeared. So he looks out the window and sees him walking through the corn, but he's walking, it's like a zombie. Like, he's just not looking around. He's just barely moving, but it's creepy as hell. Like, mm-hmm. It just, and it's little stuff like that, that if you immerse yourself in this film, I really think it works. I mean, there were, when we watched it again the other night, and I've seen it a lot, but when we watched it the other night, I got genuinely scared a couple times.
It's a damn good movie. It's basically a horror western. Yeah, not technically, it's more of a southern, because it takes place during the Civil War and all that, yeah. But it's
and
the same
Western
kind of thing.
Western didn't technically start until after yeah. the Civil War, but it, yeah, it counts, I mean, I would say.
So I'm always down for that. It's also cosmic horror. It's straight up right out of something Lovecraft could have wrote. In fact, the movie debuted at the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, I'm all over this movie. It's good, it's creepy, it's bloody, I like the acting, I like the directing and the pacing fine.
I love it, I love it.
I love how these people, they're not necessarily heroes, because they're bank robbers, so...
And murderers.
Yeah, they play that true to form. It's not like, I'm a murderer, but with a heart of gold. It's like, no, they just killed a bunch of people and stole their money, and now bad stuff's happening to them. And it sucks that bad stuff's happening to them, but it's also, you know, haha, you kind of got that coming.
Yeah, and you find out why bad stuff is happening. There is a very dark shadow cast over this house because of what the previous owner had done.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it in case you guys haven't seen it, but when you find out what it was he did do, then you're like, yeah. But I will say that the CGI faces on the ghosts that are very reminiscent of something that would come later, and that's Grave Encounters.
Yes.
But
I
this
get that
was
too, yeah.
well before that. Yep. And though even though it still, I guess, technically counts as Mummy Mouth, they're very brief. And this is a very low budget effort, so I'm not going to take that away from them. What I am going to do is praise the practical effects that they use because they are phenomenal.
Yes, I agree. So, if you're one of the many out there who have never seen this movie, we both highly recommend it. We both give it a 4 out of 5. And, yeah, go see it. It is just, it's a really good film. Set in a time where not many horror films exist, dealing with things that doesn't happen. In other words, it's unique. It's not the same old, same old.
Yeah.
So
I would say toss this on with The Burrowers.
That would be awesome.
And have
awesome,
a hell of
yeah.
a good time.
We now go to 2004.
Again.
Oh, yeah. With, this is one of your movies. One of your movies you brought to the collection. And in fact, speaking about stuff we've already discussed in seasons past, this was in our first D episode, if I remember correctly.
It was, yeah.
And
this was also on my list of my top 10 that year.
Nice. And that is Dead and Breakfast. What is this movie all about?
Well, for fans, this is for you, Dave. For fans of Oz Perkins, he's in this movie.
Yep.
Not only is he in it, but he has a pretty large role. Also, David Carradine's niece or daughter, I don't remember which, but she's a Carradine, is in it. Girly from Jeepers Creepers, Gina Phillips
yeah.
is in it, and Eric Palladino, who I always think he reminds me of, God, other guy from Jeepers Creepers.
Justin Long?
Justin Long. He always reminded me of him. But in this, you have friends traveling in a Winnebago to go to a wedding, and they end up stopping off at this bed and breakfast, but there is black magic involved, and this black magic turns people into zombies.
As it does.
So, and it is a comedy, but it's also a musical. I mean, it's not a straight-up musical, but it has several musical points. There's actually an overarching storyteller, and I can't remember his name right now, the musician, but he went on to do bigger things, but he is the narrator for the film, and he kind of starts every chapter with a little bit of a tune.
Yeah.
And then there's this great, like, dance sequence in the film that is hilarious, where they distract the zombies and by getting them to dance. So, it sounds stupid, but I think it's funny. I think it's really fun. I have a great time with it, And if you've been listening to our show for a long time, then you've heard us talk about it more in depth. But I think it's fun.
What do you give it?
I give it a 4.
Awesome. I like it. I just don't like it as much as you do. I think some of the silliness misses the mark for me. And in a horror comedy, that silliness is all important. So I give it a 3 out of 5. I like it, but I'm not crazy. But it is a decent watch. If you've never seen it, I do recommend giving it a watch. Just because, I mean, how often do you see a movie about zombies at a bed and breakfast?
You know, you want a little bit of trivia?
Sure.
Oz Perkins in this film, when they're traveling, he has a little notebook. And he keeps writing in the notebook. And somebody asks him, what do you keep writing in your notebook? Well, every time they pass roadkill, he writes it down so that later he can say prayers for all the dead animals.
Aww.
He's like a super religious guy.
That's nice.
Well, ever since I've seen this movie, I do that. I don't make a notebook, and I don't say prayers because I'm not religious. But what I do is when I pass roadkill, or God forbid if I hit something, which fortunately I don't do. I think I've done maybe twice in my life, and it...
You murderer.
It ruined me. But if I do see roadkill, I will have a moment of silence for them and bless them.
Bless them.
And it's all because of this movie. I just thought that was sweet.
Yeah, that's a nice trait, I guess. We now go to our last movie in this section from 1981. It is a movie I like a lot more. And for many, many years, this is another movie that most people just never saw. It's received a bunch of love in recent years, and it's gotten some attention, and rightfully so. It is Dead and Buried. And it's a zombie movie, but it's unlike any other zombie movie you've probably ever seen.
I would agree with that.
It is legitimately creepy and eerie. It takes place at this small coastal town that is always fog-covered and shadow-filled and all that. And whenever people go to this town, they die. They're getting killed in horrible, vicious, violent ways. And just in case you've never seen this movie, I highly recommend that you do. It is amazing. I'm not going to tell you why or what's going on. But yeah, it's basically a murder mystery where people... I'll tell you this much. People are getting killed. We see them get killed. And it's usually brutal and violent as all hell.
Like getting set on fire.
Yeah. Or just, you know, being stabbed a whole lot. But then, the next day or two, you see that person who just got killed. They're back among the living. Except now, they're pretending to be someone else. And that happens a lot. So, our main character is the sheriff of the town. And he is trying to figure out what's going on. Because some of the dead bodies have been found. So he knows something's happening. But he has no idea what. And it's that evolution of the mystery and unraveling it and all that. That just makes this film what it is. It's probably unlike any zombie film you've ever seen. Except maybe some of the really, really, really early ones. But even then, it's distinctive enough where it can stand on its own. It looks amazing. The special effects are great. I want to say Stan Winston might have done them. Which, he wasn't known for his gore effects. And obviously, he could do them. But he was mostly known for making creatures and monsters and stuff like that. It's also written by Dan O'Bannon, only partially. His contribution to this movie has been really blown up and a lot have been made out of it. Simply because, well, he also helped write Alien. So, whenever you see the poster for this, it'll say, you know, from one of the writers of Alien or something like that. But he only played a minor part in this. Somebody else wrote the majority of it. So credit where credit's due. I can't remember that guy's name, but this is largely his story. As for the poster, I've seen it a million times at the video store back in the day. It's got the face coming out of the earth that's all blue. And yeah, this is just, it's a really good, solid, well-made horror film from the early 80s that just really got overlooked. Maybe because it wasn't a slasher or something, I don't know. But I've always liked this one. And yeah, thankfully, in more recent times, a lot more people have been talking about it. So that makes me happy.
You actually did a review of this with, was it Ricky?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, with Rick Morgan. So that's out there.
Yep. What do you think of this movie?
I really like it. It's very different, but I think it's a cool little mystery. And I think the effects look good. You know, I don't know. I like the setting of a small town like this. And, you know, you get those small town, everybody's in on it vibes, mm-hmm. which I dig. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Yeah. We both gave it a 4 out of 5.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to wrap it up for this segment and this episode.
Except we still have to pick our movies for the next episode.
Yeah, you're right. Is it my turn to pick the subject?
It is.
Naturally, I was going to pick April Fool's Day because, you know, next month is April. But there's a problem with that. I can only think of 3 movies that deal with April Fool's Day. I like all 3, but I think I'm pretty sure we've talked about 2 of them in the past. And those movies are, of course, April Fool's Day, Slaughter High, which was originally going to be called April Fool's Day, and it takes place on April Fool's Day, and Killer Party, which was also supposed to be called April Fool's Day. And for proof of that, if you've ever seen that movie, it begins with a music video called April Fools. So, I would be down to discuss any of those. Unfortunately, I think we've done them.
I don't know if we ever reviewed the original April Fools, like, fully. We talked about it, of course, on the collection.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure we talked about Slaughter High and Killer Party.
I would not mind covering one of those again, simply because I'm sure we have a whole bunch of listeners who might not have heard our first season, and sadly, that's unavailable right now. We really need to fix that, so get our old seasons back up. I don't know, what do you feel about April Fool's Day?
I mean, it's fitting. It's definitely fitting.
Well, if I pick that as the subject, what would you pick as the movie, as your movie, I guess?
If that's the subject, then I actually know of 2 other movies.
Ooh, look at you. What are they?
Yeah, well, you're not going to like it.
Okay. Well, one's a remake of April Fool's, but fuck that. I will veto that. I'm not watching that piece of shit again.
Did you ever watch it the first time?
Yes. I've seen it. It sucks.
What happens in it? Name one Metallica song.
Yeah, right. You want me to throw down and prove my bona fides? A bunch of rich kids are having a party. One of the girls ODs or something falls out a window. Then everybody wonders, oh my God, what happened? Somebody seems to think that her death was not an accident and then starts going around killing all the rich dipshits.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the movie. It sucks my ass.
The other one is a movie that I've never seen, but I actually am very interested to find it. Unfortunately, it is nowhere.
Oh, wow.
And that is a movie called April Fools from 2007. And the reason that I am so interested in it is, one, it kind of sounds like it could be a remake of Slaughter High.
Yeah.
And also, it's an all-black cast. It's a black slasher. Mm. And we don't
get many of those.
Get a lot of those. So I'm really intrigued to see it, but I can't find it anywhere. But if anybody else is interested in trying to find it and check it out, it's called April Fools and it's from 2007. I haven't seen it, so I can't vouch for it or anything, but I'm definitely interested. If anybody does come across it, let me know where I can find it.
Yeah.
So if you were going to do that and you're vetoing the remake and I can't find the other one.
Is there another April Fools movie I'm forgetting about? Or I could pick my number 2 subject.
Okay, what's that?
Do you want me to pick that one?
Probably just because we have already talked about 2 of the 3, and I don't even like Killer Party, so.
Killer Party is awesome. I don't know why you don't like that movie. It is so.
I like the beginning of that movie, like the first 10 minutes.
That whole movie is just a perfect time capsule.
Your mom's a perfect time capsule. All right, what's your backup?
Chainsaw. Now let's see how big of a basic bitch you are, and what do you pick for that?
Pieces.
Ooh, okay, that's good. That's what I was gonna pick.
Call me a basic bitch.
Okay. But that means...
that you get to be the basic bitch?
No. I'm gonna have to go with... Evil Dead Part 2.
Oh, God damn it! Wait a minute. Can't I veto that?
No.
You were going to veto my pick!
Yeah, I know, because...
Look, you're making me go into dog range with...
I'm the husband, baby. That's my prerogative.
Oh.
No, would you Evil Dead 2?
No, I wouldn't. No.
Because I know you don't like that movie, but come on.
No, I'll... You know what? I'll do it.
Classic.
I'll do it.
Okay.
We're going to do it. We're going to talk about Pieces and Evil Dead 2.
Both very fun movies. Both movies I love. So, yeah, I'm going to enjoy the hell out of this. And I hope you're in misery when you're watching Evil Dead 2. I hope it just... crawls under your skin, gets stuck in your gullet. You're over there, God, I hate this movie. Me, I hate
Why are you so mean-spirited? We'll just have to see.
Yeah. Okay, so there we go. For the next show, it will be Evil Dead Part 2, Dead by Dawn, and Pieces. It's exactly what you think it is.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Everyone, I hope you had a very safe and fun St. Patrick's Day, and...
hope you got drunk!
Yeah, and hopefully nobody came and took your baby, or...
that's a thing?
Yeah, well, the Hallow.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to tie it back into the movies that we talked about. Or, you know, I hope you didn't get attacked by giant...
Squid monsters.
And if you didn't, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for visiting the House of Salmons. We hope to see you back very soon. Until then, come chat with Brian and me on our Facebook group page at Horror in the House of Salmons. And if you like what we do here and want to hear some bonus episodes, consider being a patron at patreon.com/House of Salmons. Special thanks to Rick Morgan for composing our theme music.